Okay, and we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Miranda Shake,
I'm here.
Janet Claire,
Here.
Esther Curry,
Here.
Amanda Doherty, Betsy Mahoney,
Here.
Jill Pfeiffer.
I'm here, and I know I wasn't supposed to be, but my meeting got changed.
Oh, thanks, Jill. Okay, and Diane Yeoman.
Here.
Great, thank you, everybody. All right, so the first thing I have is the share update. The biggest update that we have is for the Aspen Project. Just to let everyone know that the Aspen Project is moving forward, we have met with the Bywater Solutions team for the initial kickoff. So they're starting to review the APIs and all the codes that they need to get access to our data, and starting the testing phase as they start to build out the different OPACs for our members. So we're really excited. We are going in a cohort model. So quite a few of our libraries have started, especially our cataloging libraries, because they can see where the Ferberization isn't quite matching or we need to do some cleanup work on our end. So we have that group kind of going first to help us as we plan the implementation, so they can kind of help make changes as needed, if anything is wonky in the MARC records that we need to get fixed. And so that's my most exciting share update. And so does anybody else on the share team have anything that they'd like to add? Okay. Then we can go ahead and start with some new bit or the new business, which is the explanation of the fee scale proposals. And just to give everyone a little bit of background, we have all of this information on the SHARE website, but just in case you haven't had a chance to review that, the first question is, why are we doing this? And so our last fee review was 4 years ago, and so we haven't felt a need to increase fees up until this point because we were doing fairly well. We have some benchmarks in place where we try to keep 3 to 6 months of operating cash available. And so that way our big bills, which of course is Polaris, is due at the beginning of the year. So we have the funds available to make sure that those obligations are met. As we looked into a financial forecast, with much thanks to the SHARE, or excuse me, the IHLS finance department, looking at the SHARE budget, they started to do the analysis with the assumption that the SHARE revenues will probably rise about 1 to 2% per year, and that's because of our public libraries being on a percentage-based fee. And then, of course, our schools are based on students, and that can kind of just fluctuate, but it stays pretty steady. So when they did that, there was also the assumption that we're going to raise expenditures about 3%. So as you're, kind of thinking about that math, our revenues are not raising at the same rate as expenditures. And so that's where we started to see that we were going to go into a deficit this year. And in the next 3 years, we would start to see a deficit about $240,000 per year, if we kind of averaged that out over the next 3 years. And so when we talked about that, there really are two philosophies. And some of you might have gotten the email asking what your preference was. If you wanted to see SHARE move into more of an inclusive model, or if you'd like to keep it the existing model where everything is an as you'd used basis. And so as we started to think about the fee scale, there started to be an idea of, well, maybe we can go ahead and it doesn't have to be the same as it always has been. Maybe we could be more inclusive. And this is also in the conversation with Aspen, where there's a real concern that we're moving towards a model of have and have nots, which is the antithesis of what SHARE is. SHARE is the idea that we're all in this working together, utilizing the economies of scale to make really expensive technology available to everybody. And so there was a very clear split, and that initial comment period didn't necessarily clarify that for the SHARE Finance and Policy Committee. And so much thanks to the Share Finance and Policy Committee. Of course, they're here today. They were here at the town hall yesterday. We had two work group days. We had also another meeting, and we've looked very heavily at different proposals of how to make this work. And it bottom line, we just needed to talk to you all. So I really appreciate everyone being here today so that we could have this conversation. So now we have data, we have the proposals. There's two different proposals. The first is the traditional model, which is you pay for what you use. That includes modules, Aspen, and Cloud Library. There's also a second model. Now, this is what we kind of started laughingly referring to as the nuclear option that would include Aspen and Cloud Library. Now, just to clarify, Solus templates would still be separate because that is a fee that we're paying to an outside vendor. We also have a separate fee for cataloging, and there were a lot of reasons for doing that. But that's something else that we also just to consider that this doesn't include any cataloging fees. So, for the two philosophies, again, those two proposals, we did find that the people that did not do not participate in Cloud Library and have not selected Aspen are going to see the biggest increases. We also got a lot of feedback, especially from the initial conversations, that a lot of our small libraries were very concerned. And when we looked at that, we tried to be very mindful of not pricing people out of share. And so there were some comments that, said one person in particular that was kind of hard that, if you do this, if you raise our rates, we might have to close our doors. And that's not something that we ever want to hear. So we did try to be very protective of our smallest libraries. And so when I say small in this context, I don't necessarily mean population. I mean the libraries that have an annual tax draw of less than $100,000. So that's just to be clear of exactly what I mean by that. So that's our two philosophies. That's where our members kind of seem to be split down the middle, and that's why we want to hear from you. And so I'm going to just invite anybody with the Share Finance and Policy Committee, if you have anything with the background that maybe I've missed that you'd like to point out, I'd love to give you guys the floor if you have anything you'd like to add. Nobody? Okay. Okay, well then I will go ahead and open it up for Q&A. So if anybody has any questions about how their fees would increase, the proposals all are on the Share website. We have two different versions, one that is by your library type that's alphabetized, and then one for public libraries that's by revenue. So that way you can kind of clearly see how the algorithms are going down based on the revenues. So I'll just go ahead and open it up. Does anybody want to start?
I'll ask a question. Can you explain, and maybe I missed some, I missed a couple of minutes of this, explain how having Cloud Library actually is a discount? Is that, am I understanding that right? You said if you didn't have all of the bells and whistles, you would actually see the biggest increase. Yeah. So can you explain that a little bit?
So it would not be a discount. So the inclusive model, it spreads the cost of the membership, it spreads the cost of whatever it may be, Cloud Library or Aspen, among everyone. And so but it would not necessarily be a discount. It would be so that's actually a good point. And thank you, Amy, for asking that question, because there is one other column in that spreadsheet. On column the first traditional model, that's your current selection. So whatever modules that you use, if you have Cloud Library, if you don't, and if you selected Aspen in that initial reservation or you didn't, then there's the inclusive model, which is just the fee, which includes all of those things. And then the third is kind of so you can compare apples to apples if you use that traditional model, but then you decided you wanted both Cloud Library and Aspen. So you can compare that inclusive model to the traditional model for everything. So you can kind of see what you would be getting, the difference in cost between their traditional model with the current scale or the proposed scales to the model with the what you'd get for the same price, traditional versus inclusive. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so it looks like we do have some comments coming in.
Yes, from Rick Balsamello, we have, how can you justify such a large increase? Your models would raise our fees, not including bib services, anywhere from 25% to 40%. What other considerations were made as to alternative ways to raise revenues or cut expenses?
Right. And so that's a great question, Rick. So I appreciate you asking that. And so it's one of those situations where there were no clear, like, quote unquote winners. It's going to be an increase. And based on the rising expenditures and the just looking out for 3 years, because we are trying to not come back to members every single year with an increase. And so that's something that we try to do on a 3 year cycle. With that, there are some that have said that they would prefer to not see such a large increase right away, maybe have some type of a stepped model. But we have looked at our budget. Now, just to explain, we have the majority of our expenditures are for staffing, and we have not increased staffing in any significant way in the last few years. Now, there are some things that the Share Finance and Policy Committee have asked about, like, so for example, our salaries and our benefits that we receive. And so, could those be cut? But unfortunately, one of the things that we are also IHLS employees. And so those salaries fees are set, those scales are set by HR Source, which goes out for a salary evaluation. And then the benefits are set by the IHLS Board of Trustees. And we do have good benefits. And that is to some degree to the members' benefit, because we don't have the same type of concerns that maybe other libraries or other consortia see of recruitment and retention, because we do offer really good benefits. We are a very competitive employer. We're one of the St. Louis area top workplaces. And so that's to your benefit, because we're getting very good qualified candidates when we have positions, but we also have a lot of recruitment that we don't see a lot of turnover. Looking at the rest of our budget, there are not ways to cut to find that type of expenditures. There's areas where we do travel, but that is also in efforts of expanding membership. So, like, for example, we're sponsoring the IELTS conference this year because we are searching for ad additional membership through our school standalones. And so that's something that we have also discussed. So I appreciate that you have asked that question. I'm sure a lot of people have also asked that question as well. We just don't think that there is a areas in our budget. We run very, very lean. One of the things that we did in comparison the last fee cycle, and we will do it as we prepare further conversations as we go into maybe a member vote in the winter, is comparing not necessarily as you see, the library budget to the consortia budget, but consortia to consortia. So we review the FTEs that we have compared to some of our colleagues in the north, and maybe even some of the colleagues we have, to the left and right of us in Evergreen, Indiana, and Mobius. And we have the most members with the least amount of staff. We also have significant economies of scale. We also have a lot of support through IHLS with in-kind donations, and we've quantified that. And so we can really show that we are stretching your taxpayers' money Very well. And so we will continue to have that. I don't, and I apologize, I don't have that available yet. We were so focused on getting the proposals and all the data for that that I haven't had a chance to do that, but that will be part of the conversation as we talk about going into a vote with a final proposal. Do you have any follow-up questions from that perspective, or does anybody else have any follow-up questions about that?
I've also got a comment from Kim Keller. It was a direct message on accident. I have, first of all, share membership is not the only way a library can operate. It makes it easier, but if a library had to find another way without share, it could. And then we've also got from her, where can we find a listing of IHLS slash share salaries?
So that is, Rhonda, I don't know that we have that published, but it is public data, right?
Normally, after our annual report is submitted, I think that's located on our documents and the website, if I'm correct. We are working on our FY23 annual report now, and that will be completed into the State Library by September 30th. And then it should be located on our website. Let me just make sure if I can find where that was in previous years, and I can hopefully paste a link in the chat for that where it will show up.
Thank you, Rhonda. And to that comment, you're absolutely right that there are quite a few standalones that just reach out to ILS vendors directly. And that's also part of the conversation we'll be having as we go into the winter with a proposal and a formal vote. I have reached out to Polaris to try to see if they could help us with pricing that they would do for standalones, because we do want to know, if Polaris is going to charge $25,000 and we're charging $35. We certainly want to know that. And so, to kind of get a comparison to show the value that you receive by membership. And you're right, it's not just the ILS software, it's the interlibrary loan that you do. So how would that compare of the staff time that would go into an OCLC, the ALA interlibrary loan request form, or OCLC membership, if you don't have that already, what would that cost be? And so that's certainly something that you, I would expect that all of our directors would take into account as well.
We have from Cami Kam, are there any grant opportunities available for libraries to assist with share fees?
No, unfortunately, there are not, Cami, and we have been on the lookout for grants, but generally those are for new membership, and we have not been able to secure even that as well. So that's something that we certainly are always on the lookout for. Leslie Zavaduk used to be our e-resources specialist. She has actually transitioned into a consulting role. You might notice her name if she reached out to you about the Aspen project. She is consulting with us for 1 year for that implementation, but she also works with IHLS as our grant consultant for grants. And so she's always on the lookout for grant opportunities for us, but we have not found any that would be available.
From Rick Meyer, we have what consideration, if any, has been given to reviewing our ILS? In other words, is it time to see what else is out there?
Yeah, that is something that we have discussed, and we Trey and I have discussed this recently, and it was just we felt that what we have with Polaris is still the best product for consortia, with all of the libraries wanting to have very specific settings in place and things like that. There's certainly a possibility that we would go out to look again in the future, but with the project load that we have now with Aspen, we've just finished up the Solis project. We've kind of wrapped that up. And then, of course, now this fee scales. We just don't have the capacity to take on another project for an RFI and then an RFP. But it is certainly something that we can consider in the future.
Cassie, this is Jill. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Just to get a temperature of the people that are in this meeting right now. Is your, I don't want to say is your concern, and that may not be the right way to phrase it, but like either way, there's an increase. If we stick to the traditional model where we do a la carte, you know, there's still increases there because we have an increase of fees going on 4 years. Is more of the concern that increase there, or is it more a concern about this idea about going to an all-inclusive model? Because I mean, on both sides, there are increases. And I guess for the committee, it would be helpful to know more, is your leaning more like this all-inclusive thing just isn't what's going to work for us? Just to kind of take a temperature of what you all are thinking. I probably explained that really badly. But I will say one other thing. Definitely, if you are a library that has not done things like telephony and cloud library and things like that, the all-inclusive model is definitely hitting you harder. And I will say that I think that's kind of been a rub sometimes with the committee, is like we all made conscious choices to not have things like telephony and to not have things like cloud library or to just do Libby or whatever. And so an all-inclusive model does kind of force you back into a hole that you've specifically chosen not to be in. So there's an understanding that, you know, particularly if you're a library that's getting hit harder, that may not sit well with you.
Right. That's a great point, Jill. That was something that we, as we were looking at the proposals internally, share staff and IHLS staff, that, you know, we're going to see increases, but you get more value with the inclusive model. You're getting access to Cloud Library and you're getting access to Aspen. And but there's definitely a split of people who need to keep costs low versus libraries that I kind of feel like, I think I had kind of said that we pride ourselves on having this mentality of we are all have access to this really excellent technology, no matter what size you are. And so wanting to avoid this idea of the haves and have nots. And so what is a want and what is a need? And so I think that that's where we're circling and really want that feedback.
From CamiCom, we are a small library. If the increase would be basically the same, no matter which choice we make, I would prefer the inclusive model.
Okay. Cami, would it be okay with you? One of the things that we did yesterday that I thought was helpful, of course, each library, you'll see how it would impact your library specifically. But Cami, would it be okay with you as I used Germantown as an example?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I know it's all public, but I don't want to call anybody out or... Okay, so it looks like for your library, for the traditional model, you would see an increase of about 28%. So that would be, you've already selected, we had you down, you know what, and I think that we've already talked about having you down for Aspen, you were a maybe. So that's going to skew your numbers just a little bit because we had you down as selecting Aspen for $250. You also are down at having Cloud Library. So that would bring your total with those selections to $3,100. And so it's about 28% increase, which is $675 per year. The inclusive model in comparison would be $2,400. So you would actually be paying less under the inclusive model than you're paying now. That's pretty rare. That's not something that happens, but that's what has happened with our libraries that are smaller, that for those that were not purchasing or buying into Cloud Library, we wanted to avoid having them see huge increases. So sometimes they're at a 1% increase with the inclusive model. Sometimes they're a really high, like a 7% increase, because when your budget is less than $100,000 per year, you know, a $200 increase could really break the bank. And so we try to be really mindful of that. And so some of the libraries that did already select all of the different options are seeing a really very minimal increase. Does anybody else want to offer out their library for an example that we can kind of compare how it would look? So of course you can do this individually, but it sometimes helps the group to see what other libraries are, would be, what kind of increase they would see.
Cassandra, this is Esther. You can use us.
Okay. Thank you, Esther. I appreciate it. Okay. See, Brem, it looks like you do have some modules, and then you also have selected Aspen. So for the traditional model, using all of your current selections and based on this year's budget, because of course we won't know what that would be until next year, it looks like for the traditional model, your total would be $22,848, and that's about a 27% increase. If you went to the inclusive model, your total would be $20,761, and that would be about a 16% increase. So in that case, the inclusive model is better for you because you have already selected the different options, including some modules and Aspen. With that, in comparison, the again, this is not a true. Well, I guess it is true. Under the traditional model, when you add everything up for, again, just comparing the price for the inclusive versus the price for the traditional, when you include Cloud Library, Aspen, and everything, would be $22,848. So it's actually, well, that's actually what it is anyway, because that's you have all of the things. So that's exactly what it is. So the inclusive model would be a little bit better for your library.
We've also got a request from Allison Wakefield for Ogden Rose Public Library.
Thank you, Allison. I'll be happy to look at yours as well. Give me just one moment to get to that line. Okay. So, Allison, it looks like we have the traditional model. The increase would be about 15%. And so that has that you do not have Aspen or Cloud Library at this time. And I'm please correct me if I'm wrong in that. For the inclusive model, you would pay $1,700. And that would be about a 30% increase, 31%. So it'd be a difference in $400 for what you're paying now. So it would be a difference between $1,500 versus the traditional model, $1,700, which is the inclusive model. But with that, you would get, so Allison is one of the libraries that I mentioned that didn't opt into those different services that would see a larger increase, but we tried to make it so she wasn't going to see like a 60% increase. And so some of the libraries that did already choose those things, their increases are not quite as aggressive because we wanted to make sure libraries like Allison's weren't going to see even larger increases as we added on the different items. And so in comparison, so if you did decide that you wanted to add Cloud and Aspen, your all-in total for the traditional model would be $2,500 versus $1,700 on the inclusive model. But just, you know, to be fair, the best value for your library is the traditional model where you do not have Aspen and you do not have Cloud Library. But if we take a bird's eye view, you know, you would be able to offer more for your patrons for a little bit more, not a lot more, under the inclusive model, if that makes sense.
We've got a comment from Kim Keller. These increases are not minimal to some of us.
Yes, I absolutely agree. That's where it was not a straight down the line, everybody's getting a 10% increase. It was some libraries are going to see larger increases, some libraries are going to see smaller increases, and some libraries are going to struggle a lot more depending on their financial situation. And that is something that the committee has been very aware of.
From Wick Balsamella, we have, what is the median and average percentage increases to member libraries under each of the models?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me get that for you, if you can give me just a moment. So do you want it just for just publics, or do you want it for the school districts as well?
Whichever is easier.
I think because schools and publics are, we tried to keep them about equivalent, but because they're just totally different pricing models, I will go ahead and just do public, since that's the majority of people here today. But if anybody wants that information for, I see Sarah, for example, academics, I can get that for you as well. So let me pull that up. The average for the traditional model is 18%, and the average for, let's see, for the inclusive model is 16%. But the inclusive model sees the highest percentage increase. Some libraries are seeing, you know, upwards of 30%. And so that's where I think that we were kind of grappling with the fact that there's no perfect model.
Next we've got from Rick Meyer, you can use Decatur Public.
Rick, that's super helpful, because you're going to be hit maybe a little bit harder comparatively, percentage-wise, and actual money-wise, so don't get me wrong, but because of the percentages, when you take into account such a large budget. So thank you for letting us use you as an example. So for the traditional model in fiscal 25, just based on your current budget, the cost would be $57,769 for your just basic fee. And then we don't have you signed up for Aspen or Cloud Library. So overall, it would come to you with all your modules, $59,219.33. So that's about a 22% increase just using the traditional model. If you go into the inclusive model, that would bring your total fee to $67,250. So of course you can see that is the inclusive model has a very large increase. That would be 39% increase over the fiscal year 2024. When you compare, again, when I say trying to kind of compare apples to apples, if you did choose to add Aspen and Cloud Library, the total would be $64,119. So actually you kind of get a break using the traditional model too, for all of the things versus the inclusive model. And that's kind of the way that the percentages worked out. But it would still be fairly equivalent, if that makes sense.
We've got a comment from Sean Schendel. I was a few minutes late logging in. I apologize if I missed this information. Is the budget that these fees are being based on a library's overall budget instead of the operating budget? This includes a library's capital budget and the total fees are the fees are based on.
Sean, that's a great question. These are based specifically on your tax draws and your per capita. And so that is reported on the IPLR, and that's how we get our information to generate our annual agreements, and so you can review your fees. And so that's reported, I think it's like 8.1A through 8.4. So it doesn't include fines and fees. It doesn't include donations. It doesn't include like capital expenditures. That's totally separate from how this is based for your annual budget.
And then from CamiCom, we have, will each library be able to choose between the inclusive slash traditional models, or will there be a majority vote where all libraries need to use the same model?
So that is something that I think that when we put this out for member vote, unless there is a very clear choice that members have based on these member comments and town halls, and I don't know about the group, but I haven't gotten a sense that there has been a clear, like, hey, we want to go this route. I think that the way that we're going to do it is when we put it out for membership vote, we will put out the proposals. And we will, with, you know, the comparison with what it would cost, you know, for Polaris, and compare with some of our other consortia, so you can see how great, you know, the value that we provide. When we do that, when it goes to member vote, I think the way that I'm leaning now is to say we need to increase fees by about $240,000 per year. Do you approve that change? The next question will be, would you prefer, because our traditional model is what we use now, would you prefer to move to the all-inclusive model, yes or no? And so that way we can move forward with the traditional model. We have that pricing to do it. And then that way, the second question, if we want to move to the inclusive model, it would be, if you say, you know, if the majority wants to move forward, yes, that we would go that route. So I hope that explains that question. But there's still room for a lot of discussion between the Share Finance and Policy Committee and the Share Executive Council if they make a decision in before we get to that point of taking it to membership meeting or a vote. So if anybody has a preference of what they think that we should do, now is a great time if you'd like to share your thoughts on that.
We've got from Amy Byers, I know that we didn't have an increase for several years, and now we are paying for it. You said that this rate increases would help so that we wouldn't need to do increases over and over again in the short term. So when should we expect more increases, and how will they be divided amongst us all?
So that has been one of the concerns that we've gotten from several of our directors and member library staff members that have responded, is that, you know, it would have been better to have more incremental increases over the years versus having a larger increase the one time. But we had made the commitment last time we did this that we were trying to increase to cover for 3 years, so we wouldn't have to do increases every single year. But that's something that we've gotten a lot of feedback that maybe it would have been easier to do increases annually. So that's something that the committee will probably need to discuss. So your second question was, should we expect more increases, and how will they be divided? I don't have an answer to that question, and I'm so sorry. I wish I did, but that's something that the committee will have to maybe continue to tackle. We don't want to increase fees for the sake of increasing fees. We waited until we got to the point where we were going into a deficit. But that's certainly something that we can consider.
And I'll also add, we were also trying to be mindful of COVID, because that covered those last 2 years, and libraries found themselves in a variety of situations. Some were fine, some were not as well. And then also, I think at the beginning of this fee increase we did several years ago, where we didn't have one for several years, we were also thinking of the minimum wage increases, because libraries were saying, you know, we need to start absorbing this. So if that could be frozen while we absorb this, you know, dollar increase every year. So yeah, so I mean, there were some things going backwards that we were considering when we weren't doing fee increases, but I also agree that there is, yes, also not having it for a long time means that it's like, bam, and it's very stark.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got from Allison Wakefield, would discussing the benefits of Aspen and Cloud Library help make the decision? A fact sheet sent out so that those of us that don't use them will know what we will be getting.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have some information on Aspen, including a video of like kind of a demo so you can see what that would look like and see the benefit of why we're doing that. Cloud Library, we do have some promotional materials, and Allison, we would even be happy to offer that if you wanted to test that and do a trial. I could certainly reach out to Danielle to ask that she get your service turned on so you can evaluate it. You can actually start using it to see if that's something that you or you think that your patrons would be interested in. We'd be happy to do that.
Hey, this is Chris over in Charleston. I was just wondering how long it has been known that we were going to run into this deficit, and why, like, I get like there was a lot happening, obviously the pandemic, minimum wage, which the minimum wage increases are still not over and impacting libraries across the state. How long it's been known that you were going to hit this deficit, and why wait, I guess, basically until we as the members are kind of backed into a corner for on average 18% increase. And then I just want to add just a comment that it feels kind of like we're backed in that corner for an 18% increase, and then using that opportunity to what feels like sell us Aspen feels pretty predatory. So I just was wondering how long we've known that was a deficit. And as far as moving forward, yes, this does not, in 3 years, if we're going to have these town hall meetings again, this does not seem like a sustainable funding format for SHARE.
So, Chris, we actually started this conversation last year. And so that was, it normally takes us about a year and a half to go through the full process of doing a fee evaluation. And so the financial forecast, we do that every year. But this was the year that we realized that our expenditures were overtaking our revenues. And so that was the forecast, and that has kind of come to pass. And so that's where we, there had even been talk of like, okay, you know, should we, push it back another year, you know, because I know that this isn't popular. We've heard from so many people that, hey, don't do this, but it's again, just kicking the can down the road. And so that's where we, you know, it's difficult, you know, to raise fees. And so, you know, I don't like coming to members saying, hey, we need more money, but we need more money. And this is not me trying to sell you something. This is me telling you that if we don't raise our fees, we're going to have to look at alternatives. And that's not ideal, because we do pride ourselves on the services that we provide our members. And so, consortium.
I totally get that. I totally get fees need to be increased. We haven't done it for several years. I am 100%. I get that entirely. This is one of the things that even you've mentioned, you've heard from several libraries of doing this as an incremental thing. Uh-huh. Can that not be something that is evaluated sooner so that in 3 years we're not again in this situation? Because no one wants to be in this situation. No one is happy now. Understandably so. But right. Then to be like, we have to increase fees no matter what. While we're increasing fees, why not try and add Aspen, that we've been trying to convince the consortium you should add Aspen for the last, I don't know how many months now. Feels like an odd pairing to me, to be honest.
Well, we have to increase fees either way. That has nothing to do with Aspen. And I do understand what you're saying and where you might be coming from with that. And so just to share that, when we started talking about Aspen, we intended that to be an add-on fee because we had gotten so much feedback. I mean, we were surprised at how many people were interested in Aspen. We thought we would get, you know, the Hayner Public Library, 6 Mile, that they were going to be the ones that wanted Aspen. And we were going to get the half a dozen and we would get them started and it would be great. They would have this new product that. But when we did the demos, we got, I think there were 100 libraries that responded that wanted Aspen. And so the committee, that kind of changed the math for us a little bit because so many people did want it. Then when we started talking to the IHLS Board of Trustees, they started to say, well, if this is such a great product, why are we having libraries that are haves and have nots? That was the exact language. We should not have libraries that are haves and have nots. And that's when the finance Share Finance and Policy Committee asked Leslie Bedner about the IHLS contribution. So for anybody who doesn't know, IHLS supports Share through, I think, over $800,000 in in-kind contributions, which that means Rhonda and her team doing the billing for us. That means the marketing and communications team helping get our newsletters and our promotional materials out. You know, IT, of course, we share the cost of IT. But in addition to that, they give us cold hard cash. And so it was at $300,000 per year. That was an annual transfer that is part of the funding that they get from the Secretary of State. Thank you to the new Secretary of State, Alexis Giannoulias, to provide the support for resource sharing in Illinois. And so with that, they do support Share financially. And so when we were talking about Aspen and the comments from the IHLS Board of Trustees saying, we don't want this as an add-on product, we want this as an inclusive model, or inclusive product, so we don't have libraries that are falling behind. We had to take that into consideration. And so that's when I said that we had originally planned to just increase fees. And then it became, well, what if we increased fees, but we made it inclusive? And then we realized that if we did that, we're raising fees anyway, but you're going to get more bang for your buck. That was the bottom line. And so when we say that we're, you know, trying to pair this with Aspen, we are, but there are reasons why. And that's still, we don't have to do it that way. We could still do it as the add-on process. And that was something that I actually went to one of the IHLS board meetings and explained that it's not up to us. It's not up to our Share Finance and Policy Committee. It's up to you. It's up to our members. You decide how we spend our money. This is all up for vote. This is not us just making a decision. And so we could certainly, we're wanting this feedback so we can take that and make it part of the proposals that we put out to you. So I hope that explanation helps just a little bit.
All right, our next comment comes from Kim Keller. One, perhaps the membership should have been told more clearly of the possible fee increase when you started talking about it. Two, maybe there should have been more consideration about website design update, marking profile upgrades. I question some of these actions when you knew that share would be operating in deficit.
So let me clarify, because the share website has not been updated. That was the IHLS website, and you don't pay fees to IHLS. That's a separate, we're under their umbrella, but this share is the paid membership. So there's not been a website design update for us. And that's not something that we plan to do, because it's, we have more additional priorities that are we're focused on right now. And so the being clearly told of the possibility of the fee increase when we first started talking about it, I mean, that's why we're here today, that we didn't surprise you. That's why I sent out the email, you know, a few months ago, telling you that we were discussing it, and we were trying to get clarity on which direction that we went in. And so I don't know that we could have done that earlier or differently, because until we knew for sure how that we were planning on moving forward with an increase, I don't think that we wanted to necessarily put that out. But we, every Share Finance and Policy Committee meeting, we do talk about our financial status. We have benchmarks in place specifically because we want to make sure that we're being responsible with your taxpayer dollars. So I'm so sorry, you know, that you feel like this is being sprung on you, but this was actually our attempt to be fully transparent, to make sure everybody has a chance to be part of the conversation before it ever gets to, you know, a membership vote.
From Sarah Hill, we have, do we have any idea of how many share libraries don't provide any type of ebook platform?
There's only a handful. Yeah, there's only a handful, Sarah. That's a great question. I think, and actually the majority of our public libraries, for example, already participate in Cloud Library. If you can give me a minute, I can tell you exactly how many.
Sarah's added, no need to search. She said, thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Sarah.
From Kim Keller, we have, isn't IHLS's primary purpose to support circulation of materials among libraries?
So IHLS is a resource sharing organization. The primary purpose on the IHLS side, I would say, is more of delivery. On our side for share, so resource sharing as a whole as an umbrella, but for share, the primary purpose is, you know, to provide this technology to make circulation and facilitate circulation, but it is a paid service that you're not required to participate in membership in the share consortium as a IHLS member. We have a handful of libraries that don't. So for example, Champaign-Urbana, they don't participate in share. So I hope that answers that question, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Hey, Cassie, this is Jill. I also think one thing we mentioned yesterday too is that some of these money issues, you have to pull back even further to the state library and look at the area and per capita grants that Rails and Heartland get. And they are not even closely equivalent in terms of the money Heartland gets versus Rails. And Cassie can explain how that is doled out and why that is. But when you start there, where like IHLS has significantly less money, and then everything underneath that just kind of rains down on it. So like, for example, it's great that they give us $300,000, but if their area per capita grant was larger, they might be able to give us $500,000. We use those funds to cover expenses. Like we use that money when we brought in Solus and the app, and you know, we didn't charge people those first few years. Like we covered that cost out of part of that money that Heartland gives us. And so it kind of backs up all the way up to the top in the library and the state library and what they're actually giving our Illinois Heartland library system to function, that then in turn helps share function. So maybe you could talk a little more about that.
Oh, Jill, I'd be happy to. I'd be happy to. But I want to specifically address, okay, so there's two parts of that I really want to address. And the first is the area and per capita grant that you mentioned. The way that's calculated is area, obviously, on square miles. So between Rails and IHLS, it's pretty split down the middle. And then Chicago Public Library has a very small portion of that on that algorithm because they're considered a library system as well. With that, the second part is per capita. And so in the southern and central part of the state, that's the IHLS service area, that's per person. And so, of course, we tend to be more rural than the northern part of the state. The rail system per capita is coming from their collar counties around Chicago and their more populated areas and suburban areas. Of course, they do also have a significant portion of rural areas throughout the state, but that per capita piece is where the funding comes from that gets a little bit more, they get more of an annual support from the Secretary of State for their delivery and services that they provide. But that being said, so I want to explain that of one of the things that Jill had mentioned. But that being said, I don't think, and I'm going to try to be very careful of how I say this, I don't think that the Rails has several different LSAPs in their area that are for the most part, all independent. They have one that is going fully independent, and they provide grants to their LSAPs, but they don't do it the same way that we do. We have a very close relationship with IHLS, and we're very fortunate in that. And we actually met with their consortia groups year before last, because they were trying to focus on LSAP sustainability on their end. And we found that we are stretching our taxpayer dollars so much more than what some of the other LSAPs throughout the state do. Now, there are different in population and differences in community makeup. So some of the like CCS and SWAN tend to be in the collar counties. They have more resources, but there are some that are a little bit more similar to us. And so working in more rural areas or more understanding of the types of issues that the rural libraries are dealing with. And so with that, I really want to just emphasize that I think that we are doing a phenomenal job working together and working as a unit and between IHLS and SHARE. I'm really proud of the work that we do, and I think that we do it really, really well, especially in comparison to some other groups throughout the state that don't work as closely with their library system. Oh, and Leslie Bedner is on the call as well. She said she wanted to also comment on the system area per capita.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, thanks, Leslie.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the SHARE governance and our SHARE staff in presenting something that is really difficult to get your head wrapped around. And having done that in a previous library system and what happens with fees and where does the money, this is never, ever, ever an easy project. And so I super appreciate everyone's patience and their dedication, especially the membership, the policy and budget committee. Sorry, I'm sure I got your name wrong, but the budget group of SHARE governance you do a phenomenal job. And I know some of you have been involved in SHARE for years. So having said that, I wanted to just clarify a bit more about what happens, how the operating funds that we receive annually through the system area per capita grant, what they go to support. So, and how that fits in with the resource sharing picture in Illinois. So the largest part, as Cassie alluded to, of our budget goes to delivery that across the board. And it's very easy to see because we have to report, well, we used to anyway, have to report delivery information separate from everything else when we submit our per capita grant in the annual report. But anyway, delivery is a cost that, and where we are seeing a cost component, where we as an organization are seeing that some of the same things that you are experiencing in terms of the minimum wage requirements, in terms of, so that, you know, that was that slow but definite march from X out amount an hour up to $15 an hour. On top of that, as I'm sure you're all dealing with as well, employees or potential employees have other options of places where they can work, right? So even if you can offer $15 an hour, that may not be sufficient to make sure that you can have the quality staff to serve your patrons in your community. So there's that, again, I don't see, that's a long way of saying, I don't think that delivery is going to become less of a part of our general fund budget. It's going to continue to be the largest cost center. Beyond that, we have a membership team that serves member libraries across the organization, all IHLS members. We have, and that's growing because we're able to provide more services. We have marketing that has taken on an advocacy component to hopefully better support you as you serve your patrons and to provide you more information about what's going on across the state and what can affect you directly and how you can impact that. We have our administrative staff, that's the human resources staff, that's accounting staff, that's the real admin. There's two of us that work with directly with the board. And then we have IT staff. And that, again, all of those services combined do not equal what we submit or what we utilize for delivery. And the way that delivery works is just what Cassie said. Delivery works in hand with SHARE for SHARE members. That's how, because part of delivery is delivering to academic libraries, members of CARLI via the Illinois Library Delivery Service or ILDS, We exchange materials with our colleagues at Rails every Monday through Friday, at an overnight exchange. And then that's what allows us to provide next day delivery in many cases for share member library requests. So that's another, it is an indirect benefit of working closely with delivery, but I really feel that that helps and can make a difference for you as a share member. However, if you are not, if for libraries who don't, and there's about 45% maybe of our libraries that do not belong to share for a variety of reasons, that delivery is there for them as well. So delivery is charged with the system wide. And so where it comes to share members, because of other contracts that we've gotten over the years, it can add to that. It can actually improve share member access to materials. So, and there is, again, there's the contribution, there's a direct dollar contribution that's part of the system area per capita grant budget, has been since the very beginning, almost 13 years ago. I would say it's going to continue. And a lot of those, everything outside of delivery of our staff departments and services have in-kind contributions to share as well. And it was eye-opening when Cassie and I participated in discussions with our peers and at Rails and all of their different LSAP configurations, just what the differences are. And in terms of what a minimum fee is for a member, a very small public library member, for example, what their minimum fees are compared to what ours were, are mind-blowing. And I don't know that it's the overhead because they have separate legal organizations, but there's something else that's, I don't know why, it just is higher. And we don't have always apples to apples comparisons. But Cass, I want to just second what Cassie is saying, that the way we deliver services to our members is values-based, values in that we see share membership as a community, and we look at it as a community. We look at it as a, how do we improve what we're doing now for the community? You all have your individual or respective members that you serve. And we try to look at the broader picture. So what can we do on the IHLS side to enhance that? And I would put us up against a lot of other organizations in terms of what the value for the dollar. And I totally get and absolutely appreciate the suggested increases in these fee proposals, and that it will be for many members a very difficult conversation with your staff, with your board, as you go to look at your budgets. And none of this came about lightly. It came about, again, through the work of this team of your member representatives and our share leadership, and obviously Rhonda and her colleagues in the finance department. So I just wanted to say a little bit, and I obviously think what you all are doing is wonderful, and thank you so much for being honest about your concerns, because we can't fix it if that's not present. Okay, I'm done. Hope that helps. And thanks for letting me chat, Cassie.
Thank you, Leslie. And yeah, I really highlighted what Share was doing in comparison to Rails LSAPs and how they work with their library system with Rails. But there's also a really huge part of delivery. In my elevator speech, as I always say, you know, we're competitive with Amazon. If it's on a shelf somewhere, you're going to have it within a couple of days. And that's unheard of. I mean, that's just unheard of. They do not do it that way up north. And it's not just the shared database. They don't have the functional 5-day a week delivery. I mean, what we do down here, we do it really, really well. So again, I'll just toot my own horn on that, because I think that we have a lot to be very proud of. So
we have a comment from Kim Keller. Maybe we can't afford unheard of anymore.
Well, you mentioned Sean's comment. I think we skipped that one.
Oh, sorry, I did not see that.
Which does raise an interesting point.
This is a question that has been in the back of my head for many years. With the fees being based on a library's taxes, tax levies, and per capita, what is the reasoning behind using the full tax levies received? I can't use any of my building maintenance, tort, Social Security, et cetera, levy to pay for this. Paying IHLS share comes only from my general budget, yet the fees are out from the overall levy. This makes my fees higher, but I am hoping I am paying from a capped fund of 0.15%. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And Sean, I don't think that we do. So let me go and tell you exactly on the IPLAR, the 8.1 through 8.4 that we're using. And let me pull up the IPLAR if you can give me just a moment. I do have it right here. So I can tell you exactly how those are calculated so it's clear. So it's 8.1, which is local government. So what you receive is your tax draw. The 8.2 per capita grant. The 8.3 equalization aid grant, which most libraries don't get that. There are some that do. And then the personal property replacement tax. So those are all added up to determine your share membership. Does that answer that question?
Sean says 8.1 is my full levy received.
Okay. So that is just how we had determined the best way to evaluate your total budget and determine what you're based on your total budget. How to charge for share membership. There's other models that we had considered. So for example, by population, but what we found that it was not as equitable, where you might have a library with a small population size, but they're, you know, maybe a little bedroom community in the Metro East, they've got a very healthy budget. And so that wasn't an equitable way to charge for membership. So that's how we did decide to do it. And we want to make sure that we're using data that's easily accessible, that is being reported consistently. And so that was the 8.1 on the IPLAR.
Yeah. From Jenna Dower, we have general question to libraries. Do all libraries take share fees from corporate? In the parentheses, tax fund.
So, Jenna, I think if I'm answering this correctly, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, like 6 months. Mile uses their area per capita grant to fund our fees for share.
Crystal Gully says Harrisburg does. Sean Schendel says, I only use corporate, also known as general fund. Cami Com says, we do because we rarely have more than that part of the budget.
Hi, this is Jenna. Can everybody hear me? It just makes more sense if I talk this out. So some of us take money from corporate fund, which is the biggest tax draw that we have. Some take it from grants. I would just be interested to see what the increase would be based upon just like, I guess you would just have to do it individually by library. Otherwise, you wouldn't really have the data to know, to look at the corporate, just the corporate line item. What's the percentage increase when you look at that, or corporate and grant money? Because, I mean, we could all, I guess, use grant money if we wanted to for that, if it hasn't already been earmarked, just to see what the increase would be. Like, it would be huge, but it would be interesting to see the numbers.
And Jenna, I'm so sorry, because I'm not familiar with corporate, because I have not worked on an Illinois budget, so I am not quite sure. So are you saying like what the libraries have received over the last 4 years in comparison to the increase of what SHARE is requesting? Does that make sense?
I just think it would be interesting to know like what percent, I guess when you're looking at a smaller pool, so say you're, for sake of numbers, your corporate fund, which like my book budget comes out of corporate, my salaries come out of corporate, a lot of things come out of corporate, including the share fees. Like, so say you have $100,000, you know, that percentage, share fees of that percentage of the total is quite a bit. So when you look at, you know, how much we've received as a whole out of all those funds, like when you're basing your numbers on that, like the increase would be substantially more coming just out of corporate. Mm-hmm. Like year to year. And that probably makes no sense. But basically, so, like, it's my budget.
Okay, so it is your general fund. Do you, but it's just your, the, for your purposes, for your city, or is called corporate. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, it's the tax line that has the most money. It's the bulk of our budget.
Yeah, and I think that that was a decision when the fee scale was initially developed, that we would base it on IPLR numbers 8.1 to 8.4, that would be specific for a tax draw. Again, those are not separated out, and that is something just to be consistent, that it's reported to a third party. And so that is, again, to try to somewhat to be fair, that it's not using like capital improvement funds. It's not using grant money. It's not even using fines and fees. It is very specific to your budget on how it's reported for your tax draw.
From Rick Balsamilla, we have, I believe what Sean is saying is that our general fund levy is approximately 50% of our tax revenue received, as the rest is designated restricted funds that we cannot use to pay share fees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do get that. But it is, it still is an indicator of how your library is funded and the size of your library. So that's how it is used to base that fee.
Esther has shared Mount Vernon uses general fund. Crystal Galate has shared, I do pay cloud fee portion from per capita. Diane has shared, we also use the general fund. And then from Jenna Dower, thank you. Thanks for saying so well, Rick. What I was thinking, but not what is coming out of my mouth.
So based on this conversation, for those of you who are seeing larger increases, we would like some feedback on the proposals that you prefer. We also had some really great conversations yesterday about making this less painful, of doing some type of for those who are being hit a bit harder, some type of a program to spread it out over 2 years instead of just the one. Does anybody else have any ideas or thoughts about how we should move forward?
And I would also throw in, if you're thinking things but don't want to share them with everyone, the people on the finance committee are available to you if you want to reach out to them and share your thoughts. And that's perfectly acceptable, because that's what we're here to do, is to hear from you.
And just to remind everybody, if you're not sure who to contact for members of the Share Finance and Policy Committee, that's obviously Jill Pfeiffer. Thank you for mentioning that, Jill. Miranda Shake is the chair. Janet Clare, Esther Curry, Amanda Doherty, Betsy Mahoney, and Diane Yeoman. So thank you for mentioning that. So if you are neighbors with one of those amazing volunteers, or know someone, you don't necessarily have to reach out to Miranda as the chair. You can reach out to anybody on the committee if you have a contact with any of them. Or if not, of course, Miranda Shake is the chair. She would be a great place to start if you don't know any of them, maybe a little bit more personally.
And I also just want to say thank you all for sharing all of your comments, because it's really helpful to the committee, because we were literally at this point where we were like, we need to hear from them. We need to know, maybe, you know, maybe this is fine and we're concerned over something that, you know, everyone is going to be okay with, you know, and, you know, we just didn't know. And so it really, we didn't want to make a decision to move one thing or the other forward or whatever without talking to you all and having a really transparent conversation about where we are and what we're thinking. And in terms of, I mean, I personally think it was great to have both proposals, like one, the traditional way we always do it, and this whole idea of having everything, because it really helps us see, you know, what is this going to cost? And it varies wildly per each library, you know, and that's very relevant. But if we had not seen that, then we really wouldn't know what the cost is to us individually as libraries to do one versus the other. So I personally appreciated the time that went into making both of those proposals so we could see how it skews and how it plays.
We've got a comment from Chris. Oh, go ahead, Cassie.
Oh, go ahead, Jason. Okay. Sorry.
We have a comment from Chris. What is the timetable for a vote?
Oh, and Chris, I am so sorry. I should have mentioned that as we were talking a little bit about the proposals. The timetable, so this is just the initial conversation. We will have continued committee meetings through the fall, and then usually in December or early January, we put out documents for review to membership for any upcoming proposals for an annual meeting, which is typically held in January. The vote would then be about a week after, and then any changes would be for policy would be immediate, but for something like the fee scale, that'll go into the next fiscal year. So that'll get the beginning fiscal year 2025. You're very welcome, Chris. Thank you.
From Rick, we have respect to Cassandra and the committee for standing up to this.
Thank you, Rick. I think that I think that we are all very aware that there's no perfect solution. And it's anytime you talk about raising fees, you know, we are also very aware of the challenges that libraries are facing. And so that's why we really want to get feedback for the libraries that are going to be most impacted by this, and why I specifically invited, for those of you who maybe just saw it in a newsletter and didn't necessarily get a personal email from me, I did reach out to any library that was seeing a large increase to personally invite them to one of these town halls. We needed to talk to them. So thank you for everybody who had the opportunity to attend.
From Jenna Dower, we have, my point in thinking about the taxes, it will hit differently out of that fund, since so much gets paid from that fund that affect our day-to-day library operations. Thanks for all of the thought that has gone into this. Will libraries get a draft figure to work with for future budgeting?
Yeah, and Jenna, all of the proposals are available on the SHARE website for the town hall, and then the membership fees. There are some comparisons. So again, the traditional model, the inclusive model, and then that third column is kind of to compare the traditional model if you included everything. So that third column is not necessarily a proposal unless you're thinking of adding Cloud Library and Aspen if you don't have that already. So that'll give you some ideas of how this is going to look specific to your library. Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
From Chris, we have, would it be possible to see a proposal that sees incremental increases over the next few years to avoid a situation like this in the future?
Yeah, and Chris, that was one of the feedback that we had gotten yesterday as well, is to see if there was a way to make, for libraries seeing a larger increase, to have it phased in. And so that's something that the Finance Committee is probably going to be talking about. We also have some benchmarks that state that we have some goalposts, I guess, for our reserve fund, as well as for our operating cash, because there's always been a sense that we don't want to send out for membership increases when we have that 3 to 6 months of operating cash. We didn't hit that benchmark until this year. And then that's when we realized within the next 3 years that we're going to burn through that operating cash. And so that's where we had always had, as long as we have that 3 to 6 months, we would not ask for an increase. Anything below 3 months would trigger an immediate fee review. Anything over 6 months would trigger an immediate review. But that's something that we could certainly discuss, so that we can review how to do this differently in the future. Absolutely. Okay, I see that Jace has put in the links so you can see exactly how this would impact your library specifically. Again, there are a lot of libraries that are seeing larger increases, some that are seeing lower increases. So if you have any questions about your specific situation, please feel free to reach out to me. We can chat individually, or again, to your Finance and Policy Committee members. They're also happy to talk to you. And if anybody has any questions or just wants to send an email, I'm also happy to help that way as well. Okay, so I'm not seeing any additional comments coming in. So I think, again, just please feel free to reach out if you have a question this evening and you want an additional piece of data, I'm happy to provide that. But otherwise, I think that we'll go ahead and move on. So do we have any other new business? And hearing none, do we have any... do we have any public comment or any announcements? Okay, so our next meeting, it'll be this afternoon at 2 p.m. If anybody has some additional thoughts they'd like to join us at the 2 p.m. Meeting, you're more than welcome to. It's going to be the same Zoom link, but otherwise we'll just be available after the meeting. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to Miranda.
All right. We'll adjourn today at 11:22 or 23. It just flipped.
Okay. Thank you so much, Miranda. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. I greatly appreciate all of the feedback and the questions. It's very helpful. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.